The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Want the real story behind the sound bites and headlines? Let's find the facts. Remember, it's not a conspiracy theory if it's the truth. You are not paranoid or confused. You just need to know.
Welcome in, everybody, to another edition of Everything You Need to Know. I'm Kip Kiefer, your host. Always a great opportunity and a true honor to have the chance to visit with you on this program. It's going to be a little different than shows that you usually access because we don't tell you here what to think. We like to arm you with everything you need to informationally to think for yourself. So a little bit different approach. I like to cite the late, great Colonel Harlan Sanders, the inventor of Kentucky Fried Chicken. Colonel Sanders always boasted that he had 11 secret herbs and spices that made his product special. Well, we don't have that many ingredients in our Think Stew, but we certainly do not keep it a secret. Basically, our ingredients consist of some simple things. Common sense, which is in short supply these days in our country, unfortunately. Common sense can really clear the murkiest of waters for anything that seems convoluted and complicated. Apply a little common sense and magic happens. Irrefutable facts is another major part of the recipe, especially in a time where the progressive movement, led by our leader in the 2020 campaign, Joe Biden, standing before an audience and declaring, "We believe in truth, not facts." Well, truth is based on irrefutable fact. That's the definition of the word. Truth without irrefutable fact is a narrative. And a narrative to support an agenda is not truth. It might be their truth, but it's not the truth. Also, the perspective of great historical precedent, because the old adage is really true, history does actually repeat itself on a regular basis. And there is so many parallels to be drawn with modern times, with other times of seeming disarray and trouble, that it's really almost spooky if you have great knowledge of American and world history that you can find examples of exactly the situations that we're talking about. And we're going to get to the to that ingredient being very key in today's subject matter. And the final one is probably the most important additive. It's the combination of faith, optimism, and confidence, because that is what, as Americans, we are armed with. It's in our DNA. It's in our nature. And it always is what sees us clear in any times of stress or problems. It's our faith, it's our optimism, and it's our confidence. So with that being said, I mentioned the historical precedent of seemingly dark times or challenging times. You can find it in so many corridors of history. It's almost a constant that there's a threat in every generation or every period of years, something on the horizon or something directly impacting people's ability to pursue their life, liberty, and happiness. And, you know, we talk a lot about on this show, and all the other shows on the air are also, of course, from their ideological perspectives, harping on everything that we are currently witnessing in our world. And I think it's a common thread, again, calling on history, that every time there is some kind of seemingly ominous threat, it is always undone by the same factor. It's the perpetrator, the despot, the tyrant, the ideological movement, whatever it might be, it's always unwound by its own arrogance and egomania and catastrophic careless mistakes. It goes back to kind of the original cliche, give them enough rope, they'll hang themselves. That is pretty much the norm in all of these situations. And I think in times of desperation, people saying, you know, how are we going to, you know, get back to normal? Normal is an interesting word now, because unfortunately, this is our new normal, is to deal with adversity and threats to, and it's ironic as can be, the usage of this phrase by people that are trying to tear down this country, a threat to our democracy. The threat to our democracy is this reverse reality of this progressive movement that is trying to usurp everything in terms of our founding principles and everything we stand for, our Constitution, by picking and choosing the passages that they want to cite as threats and the passages they want to ignore because it disrupts their agenda. So, again, I don't want to ramble here, but I do want to point out that once again, in every situation you look at, that is what tears down the opportunity that a faction trying to create chaos and disruption, that is the common thread throughout. And I think we're starting to see the advent of that occurring right now. And there's several examples of it, but the one that really stands out to me is, as a lot of this nonsense kind of came up over the horizon, and so much of it, and we've talked about it repeatedly on previous shows, so much of it is kind of a strange group of bedfellows that all have a common agenda to kind of tear down the United States. It's really an interesting, you know, point in world history that this country that is so maligned by so many, but it's also so admired for its strength and its wealth and its resources that it's the most desirable acquisition that all of these people with these various agendas would like to control. And they've all kind of unofficially affiliated into this evil empire of adversity for people that, again, are constitutionalists and love this country and have faith in it, the fact that it's the greatest country in the history of the world in terms of its conception. Lincoln called it the Great Experiment, and it's an experiment that's still ongoing. And we've survived so many threats to our civilization and our way of life, and this is one that we're going to come out on the other side. And I want to call attention to one specific example of the tide turning. It, you know, remember the old adage about give a mouse a cookie and he's going to ask for a glass of milk? Unfortunately, so many times in world history and American history, problems exacerbate themselves because we appease, we stick our head in the sand, we hope that different agents that are causing trauma will just go away. And that's wishful thinking that never works. And it's until we're pushed to the absolute limit is when we push back. And when Americans push back, the result is extraordinarily successful. And this movement, starting with its identity politics and trying to divide Americans and calling the complete absurdity of insults and different things to people that have the audacity, cancellation, of course, being one of the major ones, that have the audacity to question their ideological approach. These people are using a playbook basically from the Saul Alinsky book in the late 60s, The Radical's Handbook. And in that book, Alinsky says, our greatest weapon against dissent is ridicule. And Americans do not want to be called names or labeled with different distinctions. We've had shows on this before. My belief system basically qualifies me in their book. I would be referred to as a domestic terrorist or white supremacist. And those things couldn't be further from the truth. And I said on last time's show that I know thousands of people. I have close friends. I've worked all over the country. I've been in several industries. I have lifelong friends from my high school years. I don't know a single person. I'm not acquainted with one person who has racist inclinations or has you know, any disregard toward any other person. I think the overwhelming majority of us here in America are all for all Americans having access to the American dream and having unlimited success and prosperity. That's what really is the goal here. And when you say make America great, the again word gets us in trouble, because then people can say, well, they want to drag us back 100 years when groups were excluded and we had all of this problems and different things in our country. I think the slogan should just be make America great, because we're always striving to do that. America's past is not perfect, but if we make America great, that means that it's great for every single American, that they have unlimited access to the dreams they have and fame, fortune, whatever it is they aspire to. So with all that being said, the example I want to give you of them taking too much ground and really waking up a sleeping giant was this latest, very much publicized assault on our children. And that's going to be a line in the sand that Americans are not going to stand for. And it's going to, and it already has, completely pushed people that would tell you that they have no interest in politics, they just were kind of indifferent, they lived in a little bit of a vacuum that's their own lives. But when you start to mess with our children, you have crossed the line and you've cut your own throat, because you're going to get pushback like you've never seen before, and it's already happening. If Americans and parents are going to die on any particular hill, it is defending their children. And this is where this movement has gone too far, with all of this indoctrination of trying to create a normalcy for the idea of familiarizing young children with sexual content and with this gender fluidity nonsense, telling them that whatever they identify with, they can achieve becoming that. And, you know, the bottom line is, it's a cold, hard fact, and I'll be called a bigot and insensitive for saying it, but you're biologically either a male or a female. And there's no drug, there is no chemical treatment, there is no mutilation that's going to change that fact. Now, again, I have no problem with anyone who wants to identify themselves as anything. But you're not actually, if you're a male, you're not actually ever going to be a female, and vice versa. It's just the facts, and it's something that they're trying to sell to our children. They're trying to indoctrinate them into this thinking that they live in a horrible, evil country. They do not emphasize all of the things, like our recent Memorial Day, where so many Americans gave their last full measure of devotion, laid down their lives to protect this wonderful privilege we all have as Americans to be free people. It's the insidious mistake, the catastrophic mistake, that these kind of individuals, these kind of movements, these despots, these tyrants always make. They push it too far, and it all blows up in their face. And I think you're seeing the beginning of that happening. It started with the election of Glenn Youngkin in Virginia last year, when, again, the teachers union, which has become radicalized with a lot of these left extremist people taking control and dictating that policies and education need to change. Reading, writing, and arithmetic are no longer emphasized. It's equity, it's diversity, it's inclusion, it's sexual orientation, and parents are not going to stand for that. A 7-year-old doesn't need to be inundated with that kind of information. Let our children be children. Don't mess with our kids. That's the message that Americans are sending, and I think that's the fuse that's been lit that's going to turn upside down this entire movement that we're experiencing. That's my thoughts to start the day. We'll have more in just a moment. We are glad you're on board on Need to Know here on Tony Curry Radio.
Welcome back, everybody, to part two of this week's Need to Know. Kip Kiefer with you again. Looking forward, next week we will have Terry Quillian, my broadcasting partner in crime. She is going to return to the broadcast next week, and we'll have a very interesting show. She's got a theme that I'm really looking forward to presenting to all of you next week, so make sure you get ready for that. We're going to continue this discussion. The first half, of course, we talked about how America has been in dark hours and in difficult situations before, but it's usually the faith and perseverance and determination of the American people that see their way to a resolution eventually, and that combined with the fact that many of our enemies and people that are trying to tear down this wonderful country with all of the great things that all of us enjoy as terms of freedoms and liberties, they eventually fail because they bite off more than they can chew and basically do themselves in with their ambition and ego. So to kind of expound on that, I'm recording this on a very special day. It is June the 6th, which was one of the great days in American and world history, because this is the anniversary of D-Day, which of course happened on June 6, 1944, on the beaches of Normandy, France, when the largest amphibious force consisting of American, Canadian, and British troops stormed the beaches in France under tremendous unyielding fire and the bravery that these guys showed in executing this mission was absolutely exceptional. And the motivation was to destroy the greatest evil fascist regime ever in the history of this planet, who had already done unthinkable things. And at that time, it was not even known how unthinkable and absolutely appallingly evil their maneuvers had been, resulting in the extermination of about 6 million people. But when they stormed the beaches of Normandy, I think it was an unbelievable demonstration of American ingenuity and determination and moral courage, all of the things that combine to make this country great. And the term always associated with that is American exceptionalism. American exceptionalism is a term that is really misunderstood and even derided in this day and age because people don't know its origins or don't know what it means. They think it's just some kind of braggadocious, boastful term that America is exceptional, is just this, you know, self-promoting BS that we are better than other countries. That is not the origins or the meaning of American exceptionalism. What those soldiers demonstrated on that beach is absolutely the primary example of what it means. And the fact that, again, they were there to liberate a continent and save people from this evil regime says all you need to know about America's commitment to what our founding principles are. But let's talk about the term American exceptionalism and where it came from and what it means. In the 1600s, a religious figure by the name of John Winthrop was sailing to the United States from Britain, predominantly for the reason that most people were fleeing. They were tired of the crown, the monarchy of England, telling them basically how to live their lives, how to worship, taking a lot of their money and taxation and such. And these people wanted a new life and wanted the opportunity to pursue liberty and freedom. And Winthrop, on the passage across the Atlantic, delivered a sermon on the ship that really highlighted a biblical passage from Matthew, and I don't have the numbers, I'm not a biblical scholar, but I know the basics of that particular passage in the Bible, and it was, there is the possibility for a shining city on a hill. You know, Ronald Reagan seized on that same theme in his public life and political career. The shining city on the hill concept mentioned in Matthew, that biblical passage. And Winthrop talked about that and talked about the responsibility and the commitment that anyone embarking on this mission to America to try and establish this bastion of freedom and liberty and individual rights and all of the great premises and origins of our existence here in this country. He talked about that in that sermon and talked about the responsibility to be exceptional in this pursuit. And that's the driving thing. It's not a boast. It's not a brag. It is like a pledge. It's a commitment. It's where you raise the bar to take on the responsibility to be an American and to be the occupants of the shining city on the hill. That it's a commitment. It's a standard that Americans are expected to live up to. It's, again, not some boast that we're better than everybody else or better than other countries. It's to accept the responsibility of being an American is to embrace the situation where you are committed to making America as fabulous and successful as it can be. So it's, again, the setting of the bar, not some kind of bragging that our country and our people are better than others. And it's a standard to live up to that I think this country, time after time after time, has made happen. Now, the latest enemy, unfortunately, is from within, which is the most difficult enemy to deal with at all, because factionalism is what has destroyed many great societies and civilizations in the past, and we can't let it happen. So what I talked about in the first half here, when they start to mess with our children and start to try to, completely tear down the family structure and all of the things that are really our fortifying foundations, that's when they cross the line and Americans are not going to stand for it. So I thought that was an important distinction to point out, to kind of emphasize the point here that we've got a lot going for us. This is the greatest country ever conceived. We are united as a people in our darkest hour. When World War II, when Hitler first started annexing other countries around him, there was great appeasement in the world. Famously, the French and English representatives traveled to Germany. The Prime Minister Neville Chamberlain negotiated a deal with the worst human being, the most evil doer in the history of the planet Earth. Of course, he didn't stick to or adhere to any agreement. He did whatever was necessary day to day to promote the rise of in power of Nazi Germany. But he made a deal with Hitler, Chamberlain did, that, okay, you've already annexed all these surrounding countries. No more. This is we're not going to stand for any further military aggression against other countries. And the one that they really drew the line in the sand was Poland. And Hitler agreed with the Chamberlain request, only to less than a year later completely invade Poland, which drove France and England to declare war on Germany, despite the fact that they were ill-prepared to deal with what had become the mightiest military power in the country or in the world. Now, you might say, well, what about America? Weren't they stronger than Germany at that time? Absolutely not. After World War I, everybody was so affected in this country with the loss of life and really Americans committing so much revenue and so many lives to a European struggle, basically, that there was such a movement and such an opposition to even getting into the war. And that was a huge factor that led to our military between 1921 and when all this broke out in the late 30s. The American military, this is a shocking fact because of what we're used to in our lifetime. The American military at the time that World War II was breaking out in Europe was only the 16th. There were 15 countries more powerful militarily, with more planes, more ships, more soldiers. The emphasis on military was so de-emphasized in that time period. And don't forget the great stock market crash, the Great Depression that started in 1929. America was economically in just disastrous shape. So we had a weak military. We had very poor economic stability. And yet when called upon, America stepped up in the biggest way possible. And in the most amazing demonstration of American exceptionalism, factories were revived and completely converted. Planes, tanks, all kinds of materials for waging war became a 24-hour-a-day operation from coast to coast. People that had never had regular jobs before, particularly women, rolled up their sleeves and worked shifts and double shifts in factories while the men pretty much were shipped overseas to fight. Older people that were not in shape to be soldiers, everybody chipped in, everybody sacrificed. There were rations on food and other products that everybody happily sacrificed. What the result was just extraordinary. What this country, within about a year and a half, transformed itself from a weak military power to, again, the premier military power. And we needed to be, because we were doing the impossible, fighting wars in the Pacific and in Europe at the same time. And what America accomplished in World War II against the most evil fascist regimes in the history of our world is absolutely extraordinary. So if somebody says American exceptionalism and talks about how it's wrong for America to think it's superior to others, correct them. It's not that feeling. It is a fact, and it's because Americans have a standard to live up to, and that's what it's all about. That's Need to Know for this week. Again, join us next week, and also later this week, Kip and Tony, Kiefer and Curry. We'll be back at it with another one of our great topics, so looking forward to that. Always wonderful to have all of you on board. Have a great week, everybody.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.